Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work offers a one-year advanced standing option for students with a bachelor's degree in social work that builds on prior training and connects students with expert faculty and 5 specialized pathways. Apply by February 1st at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Imagine a classic Chicago bungalow, which is about 1,500 square feet. Now imagine a pile of 343 bungalows, all vacant. That's about the size of the massive Libby McNeil and Libby plant in Blue Island. The whopping 515,000 square foot building has been around for more than a century and was once a well-known place for canning the fruits and veggies grown on nearby Illinois farms. But to say the site's been underused is an understatement. So, are there plans to finally revive the building? We were joined by none other than Reset's architecture guru, Dennis Rodkin, to learn more for our What's That Building series. And I started out with some music.
When it says Libby's, Libby's, Libby's on the label, 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 nothing's better, better, better on your table, 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 cause we think you'll agree it's hard to find a canned vegetable that's
younger, tender, rounder, sweeter.
Does this bring back memories for you, Dennis?
Oh, yeah. People my age, you used to sit in front of the TV and sing along with it, which I am not going to inflict on you today.
What a catchy jingle that was. Now, Libby's, it was founded in 1867. It became this huge food brand in the 20th century, Dennis. Which foods were they known for?
Well, they start out canning meat. They start out, they didn't actually start in the stockyards, but they end up in the stockyards canning meat.
Mm-hmm.
But then they realize, you know, we can also do this with produce. We don't have refrigeration yet in most homes. And so canned fruit, canned vegetables mm-hmm. really became a staple. And they became one of the biggest in the country canning fruits and vegetables.
Yeah. But the Libby McNeil and Libby's building, its history and foundation, that's been shaky, to say the least. Take us back to that time at the Union Stockyards.
Well, so again, they're growing like crazy. They have moved into the stockyards to be near where all the meat is. And then they're canning produce from California. There's even, I think I showed you an ad from 1916. They're bringing pineapple and they are booming. But one of the problems is you've got to get all this produce into the stockyards mm-hmm. by rail, and it would be fresher, certainly not the pineapple, but the Illinois-grown produce is going to be fresher if you take the plant to where the farms are, South Cook County. And so they build down here in Blue Island at 136th and Western in order to be close to the farms.
So enter that location at Blue Island. Other towns, though, I hear, were competing for this. It kind of became a little testy there.
Well, I think so. You know, there's this massive industrial boom in South Cook County, Northwest Indiana. And what Ken Jellema, an official of the Historical Society there, told me is at the time, Whiting, Indiana, Hammond, Indiana, Blue Island, they're all essentially bidding to get this plant exactly the way we see companies bidding to get an electric battery, a car battery mm-hmm. plant, or a tech plant.
Yeah. It had a good run, though, right? From 1919 to 1967, this Libby plant here in Blue Island. But in 1967, that's when it announced it was closing.
They're going to close the next year in spring of 1968. And this drops like a bomb. There's a big boom in the South Suburbs and there are huge employers everywhere. Libby is not an enormous employer. It's got about 250 people in this large plant,
mm-hmm.
but it's a major presence. And one of the things that showed its presence, Jellema told me, is all over town, you could smell like when tomatoes were being canned, you could smell tomatoes or pumpkins. And he said, you know, you could have been in another town smelling chemicals, but people in Blue Island are smelling produce being canned. It really was a major presence in that part of South Cook County.
Yeah. So was there a shift then eventually at the same time away from industrial jobs? Is that what started to happen too?
Well, so first of all, what happens for Libby is this ironic thing that they have moved down there to be near the farms. And then South Cook County has grown so much that the farms aren't close by anymore.
Yeah.
The plant is no longer near the farms. They are farther south. And there's not as much reliance on local rail as there used to be. You can use trucks. So they don't need this plant anymore. So they actually closed for the same reason they had opened, because of where the farms were. And at the time, I think what almost anybody would have assumed is the plant would be refilled by some industrial use, because South Cook County had steel and many other industries booming. But this comes right at the beginning of kind of the downturn. We lost in South Cook County and Northwest Indiana about 300,000 jobs over the course of a couple of decades. And so nobody ever signs up to refill that plant.
Let's fast forward to the 2010s, Dennis. This old Libby plant in Blue Island, it eventually becomes part business incubator. So no more, like the canning is just done at this point.
Canning was just done. And as far as I can tell, the building has never been full again. It's never been more than partially full. And I don't know what the uses were in the 70s, 80s, but you get to the 2010s and a real estate investment firm has it and puts a business incubator in part of it. And that's running through the 2010s. But again, but you're looking at a 500,000 square foot building on 8 acres, and they're using just a small
portion of it as a business incubator. So most of it still sitting empty.
Most of it was empty for all that time. And then eventually the business incubator starts to sputter, and the real estate firm that owns it donates it to a couple of nonprofits, one that deals with people's recovery from drug abuse, and another that provides housing for veterans.
Yeah.
That was in 2017.
That happened less than a decade or so later. And so these two nonprofits, they both own the building at the time. What are their plans for usage?
You know, there's not a lot about what they were going to do. It was, let's try to turn it into housing. This is 2017. And then a few years later, the veterans nonprofit pulls out, and the recovery nonprofit, the substance abuse recovery nonprofit, holds on to it. They were based right across the street. They had a facility in the old Mother of Sorrows High School right across the street and down a little bit, down Western just a little bit, 250 beds. They're providing job services, housing, food for people in recovery.
Just across the street.
Yeah. And so what they said is we really want to get a facility going in this big building. What they called it at one point was a fun factory. It was going to provide jobs for the people in recovery and also attract customers, paintball, all those kinds of things inside and outside this building.
But it sounds like that didn't work out either.
Never did. You know, it turns into a long legal battle, lots of turns where they're not paying their utility bills. The utilities are shut off. The city of Blue Island is trying to get a hold of the building. And finally, this year, they walked away. The recovery group walked away. They also shuttered their facility across the street at Mother of Sorrows.
Oh, so maybe they're totally done. Who knows?
Couldn't reach them. I tried. But now the city of Blue Island owns the building.
Yeah, and this was news that we got earlier this year, wasn't
it? Yeah, and this is actually good news. This is because what the city planner, Mike Schroeder, told me is this is the first time we, the city of Blue Island, can actually attack this problem. It hasn't been owned by the city, though it's been this sort of blighted spot right outside the downtown of Blue Island for decades. Now the city can try to do something with it.
Yeah. And so did you get a chance to take a tour?
I did. We could not go inside. It's all boarded up. It is zipped up tight because what Schroeder told me is they don't even know what's going on inside. There's garbage piled inside.
Oh, wow.
There are elevators, big industrial elevators that may not function. They have to do a complete environmental cleanup before anybody can go inside and before they can talk about what the building can become. outside, there was fly dumping for decades. There are literally hundreds of mounds of crushed asphalt. It appears that the past owner of the building was accepting trash for a fee, accepting this asphalt for a fee. That's not confirmed, but all that has to be cleaned up. I mean, when you're walking around, it takes, this building is huge. It takes more than 10 minutes just to walk around the building.
Did you do the lap around the building?
I did. And the problem is the entire time you're seeing these mounds of asphalt, you're seeing old rusty car parts.
Yeah. And they were concerned for your safety, right? To be able to let you in.
They won't let anybody in. They've got it. They have it padlocked real hard because, again, they have no idea what's inside, really.
Well, it looks like folks are looking for help from the public. I noticed online that the Calumet Heritage Partnership is asking folks to email them if they've got any suggestions for preservation of this plant. Think that'll go far?
Well, once again, it's a long-term prospect because first they've got to get it cleaned up. And the idea of restoring a building like this, again, over 300 bungalows all sort of piled together on one site, whatever idea you have is clearly going to cost quite a bit of money. And you don't even know how much because you don't know what mitigation is involved. The utilities aren't working now. And as I said, the elevators aren't. But do you even know whether the interior walls will remain standing? Yeah. There aren't many because it was a factory. So any idea anybody has is really sort of pie in the sky at the moment.
Yeah.
Until somebody gets their arms around, the city of Blue Island gets their arms around, what exactly do we have here?
Yeah, a lot of parts to figure out on this one. Well, I know you'll keep an eye. That's Dennis Rodkin, Reset's architecture guru and Crane's Chicago Business residential real estate reporter. Thank you, Dennis.
Thanks, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced and mixed by me, Sasha Ann Simons. It was edited by Dan Tucker. Arts, culture, breaking news, and more, Reset brings you inside Chicago through conversations to keep you in the know and connected. Hit subscribe wherever you listen to never miss out, or you can find us at wbez.org/reset. Thanks for listening. We'll meet again later today.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.